We have with us live in the studios once again, John Parrish and Maria Tomchik, both with Eat This Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
All right, diving in, local events, starting out with developments around the recent shooting of John Williams.
Yeah, John Williams, the Native American woodcarver who was shot by police last week. The ACLU sent a letter this week to Mayor McGinn and to Police Chief John Diaz regarding that shooting, and in that letter, they called for increased training or a change in the training of Seattle police detectives and police officers, and they included in that, you know, perhaps training police in cross-cultural skills, and they also highlighted the need for better leadership as well. Although you might say it's a little bit late for that now, since the city just
say maybe they could bring in somebody as the police chief.
Yeah, since the city just confirmed the interim police chief as a new police chief, and there were problems with him in the beginning. Council member Tim Burgess, who's the chair of the Public Safety Committee and has been very cop friendly all along.
Well, he's a former cop.
Yeah. Has said, this week he called for the city to do something. What we need is an outside review of the shooting. And of course, in his mind, that means bringing in an outside law enforcement agency. Of course, no mention of a civilian review board. That's completely off the radar.
Yeah. And the fact that the city already has an agency, the Office of Professional Accountability, that's supposed to act as an independent watchdog. That's irrelevant also, because the city has never seen, and the police have never seen fit to give that agency the kind of powers to call witnesses that would be necessary to conduct a truly independent investigation. All they're allowed to do is review the police department's own investigations.
Internal investigations. Yeah. And then Mayor McGinn is taking a wait-and-see attitude. He's basically saying, no, let's just wait until there's an inquest by the King County Prosecutor's Office. Let's just wait until the Firearms Review Board, which is headed by the deputy police chief, comes out with their, you know.
Yeah, and as I mentioned last year, the result of the inquest process is all but a foregone conclusion, because it's been absolutely 100% exoneration of the police literally since the 1970s.
Yeah.
There have been no variation, no matter how outrageous the circumstances of the lethal force that's used.
Yeah, but even the ACLU's letter calling for mild changes and better leadership, even that's gotten condemned by the police department and the local business community. Is, oh no, how can you second guess the police? Blah 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 blah.
Meanwhile, the Seattle Police Officers Guild has been busy, you know, defending its officer for having acted heroically, which is really sad.
Pretty hard to understand that at this point.
All right. Moving on, developments with parking in our city.
Yeah, folks who are driving downtown to park might notice some new e-park electric signs at 6 downtown parking garages. Only 2 of those parking garages are actually public garages. The other 4 are private ones. The new signs are going to direct drivers to garages that have empty parking spaces in them. The idea behind this, as Mayor McGinn told reporters this week, the idea behind the new e-park signs is to try to relieve congestion on city streets by cutting down on the number of drivers who circle the block repeatedly looking for on-street parking, to try to funnel those into off-street parking in parking garages, and to cut down on pollution and global warming gases, blah, blah, blah. However, while it might cut down on congestion, it's also going to cut down on the amount of cash in people's wallets, because on-street parking is only $2.50 an hour, whereas parking in parking garages, particularly the private parking garages, can cost anywhere from $8 to up to $20 an hour, depending upon where you park and when. And it's questionable when the city provides that little perk to private companies to try to funnel more revenue their way, particularly at a time when the city just announced that there's a $67 million hole in the city budget for next year. But what I find kind of interesting is when critics pointed this out to Mayor McGinn, he kind of scratched his head and he said, well, maybe we're not charging enough for on-street parking downtown. So as one of his solutions for fixing the hole in the budget he announced this week was to raise parking fees downtown, the cost of on-street parking.
The McGinn administration's strategy in almost every respect is to try and discourage driving in the city of Seattle. And that you know, from an environmental standpoint, that's a very wise thing to do, but it needs to go hand in hand with alternative transportation choices, because way too many people, given our urban geography, are dependent on an automobile for transportation because public transportation options are so limited, particularly on nights and weekends, and because Metro has been emphasizing expanding service in outlying areas of the county as opposed to where the demand has been increasing over the past couple of years in the city itself. The service just isn't adequate for a lot of people to do what they need to do, particularly if you've got to haul things around, if you work irregular hours, if you have to go to multiple stops. I mean, unless you have a lot of time that you can invest in transportation, it's just not a viable option. And those are the people that are being penalized. The people who cannot afford to pay these increased parking rates, cannot afford towing on roads, et cetera. We're moving to where driving in the city is being seen as a policy option that should only be available to the people who can most afford it. And that's fine and well if you have other transportation options available, but they're not moving in that direction.
Yeah, or if you live in a city like in some European cities, like, for example, or some European countries like Denmark, for example, which has a great system of bicycle paths, and they really encourage people to get around on bikes. But Denmark is flat. Seattle is not flat. And it just does not make sense to encourage everyone to ride a bicycle in a place that is not very bicycle friendly.
Yeah, and a lot of people can't ride bicycles. They're too old, or they're disabled, or there are people for whom that's simply not a practical option.
Yeah, yeah. So we need emphasis on other kinds
and those are the people, by the way, who are most likely to be on fixed incomes too.
Yeah. So we need an emphasis on other kinds of transportation, other kinds of transit issues. The city's emphasis so far has been on building a single trolley that really goes nowhere and really serves a very small number of people who work for businesses in the South Lake Union area.
I was going to say it was a very small number of people who work for Vulcan.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Vulcan tenants in Vulcan buildings in South Lake Union.
All right. Well, you mentioned the city budget. Talk about that.
Yeah, the city budget. It's interesting, you know, McGinn's solutions for plugging the hole in the city budget are actually better than what the Greater Seattle Chamber of Commerce has come up with. This week, they sent a list of six items, their wish list, to Mayor McGinn for plugging the hole in the city budget. And on that six-item wish list, I found that two are actually for more spending. The first two, one is they asked McGinn to provide more police, that the city should redirect its priorities to providing more police officers for the street. And then the second item is to build the downtown traffic tunnel to replace the viaduct as soon as possible, to make that a priority too. And I looked at that and I said, how's that going to plug the hole in the city budget? I don't get it. And then they will go on to come up with four options for cutting the budget hole down. One is to collect parking fees from people who haven't paid their parking tickets, which that's a good idea, but it's a one-time fix, and it's not something that's going to be an ongoing solution to plugging an ever-expanding hole in the budget. The second idea is to privatize government services, which, as we all know from looking at the mess of George Bush privatizing the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, that can actually increase your budget problems. And then two other options that kind of go along with that privatization of government services. They want to ensure that the city doesn't impose any additional regulations, which could cost the city government more, and of course cost businesses more. And they want the city to just cut payroll. That's their solution. Just cut payroll, privatize everything, just cut payroll, and you've got the solution to all your problems.
You know, if the government just went away, that would really solve the budget problems.
So I guess, you know, I guess the Seattle business leaders just don't need things like arts funding, parks, affordable housing, streets, sidewalks, bike lanes, firefighters, streetlights, health inspectors, electricity, clean water, or sewage treatment plants. Like the rest of us do.
All right.
And we're happy to deny them those services as long as the rest of us can, you know, still have them.
As long as they promise not to move away to someplace else that does provide those things and then start the process all over again.
Anything else in the city budget?
No, that's
all
it.
Right.
Well, I do think McGinn deserves credit for the agreement that he reached this week with unionized city workers to reduce their cost of living allowance from 2+% a year, which is they're guaranteed in their contract, to 0.6% in exchange for keeping health care costs for employees the same through 2013 and better grievance procedures. It saves the city about $6 million out of their budget hole, and it's not sort of compromise and the sort of adroit dealing with the city unions that you were seeing under the Nichols administration. One of the questions about McGinn coming in is somebody who really hadn't managed an institution the size of the city of Seattle with 10,000 employees, how he was going to fare with that. And so far, the answer is he's done a much better job than Greg Nichols, who had that kind of experience coming in.
All right. Moving on, Metro is feeling major budget woes.
Oh, yeah. Metro's got its own budgetary problems. And, of course, they're looking at a solution to their problems in And what they're doing is they're saying, okay, we've got two ways to solve this problem. One is to cut service, which nobody wants to do because there's such an increase in demand, and versus the other way, which is to cut driver wages. Well, that's also not a great solution either, because once you cut driver wages, you start losing drivers and you start having problems with service, et cetera. It's similar to a service cut in a lot of ways. Also, When you look at driver wages, they're only about a quarter of Metro's budget. So you have to ask yourself, okay, where does the rest of this cost come from? Some of it, of course, is vehicle maintenance and vehicle replacement. And Metro has been looking at and actually hasn't been playing up the option of not replacing some of its older buses, waiting a couple years to do that. The other is administrative salaries. You know, why does it boil down to a cut in service versus a cut in driver wages when drivers are not the only folks being paid by Metro? They should be talking as well about a cut in administrative wages, or maybe looking at that as a first option.
All right. Moving on, Tacoma judge weighing in on our state campaign spending.
Yeah, this week a judge in Tacoma, U.S. District Judge Ronald Layton, agreed with a lawsuit brought by Family Pact that limits on campaign spending in the final weeks of a campaign are unconstitutional under the state constitution. So he's essentially thrown out any limit on the ability of large PACs and donors to contribute as much as they want to state campaigns in the final weeks of a campaign.
Yeah, and that's particularly going to be critical this year when you have so many ballot measures on the initiative that are funded by major deep-pocketed corporations. And we saw this week Costco's funded liquor privatization initiative getting a whole bunch of money dumped into it by Walmart. And, of course, you know, Walmart, that's chump change for them compared to the profit potential of selling hard liquor in their stores. So we're seeing particularly the initiative process really being corrupted by these business interests who have vested interest in the ballot measures that they're sponsoring, and now they have the capacity to dump, you know, unlimited amounts of money. We already had a court ruling that said that they could lie freely in their campaign ads, and there won't be time to counter that. So it really is a serious corrupting of the democratic process.
All right. And then finally on local, the insurance hikes.
Yeah, statewide insurance rate hikes are headed our way starting October 1st. Regents Blue Shield has won the okay from the state insurance commissioner to increase rates from 16.5% up to 23.7% for people's insurance premiums. Group Health is looking at an increase of between 8.2% and 13.8%. KPS around 18%, Primera about 9%, and so on. Inflation at this point is almost nil, what with the recession and with the interest rates so low. So people are asking, you know, why the heck are insurance premiums increasing by double digits still? Well, part of the answer is that insurance companies are getting in their rate increases now before the healthcare reform takes effect in 2014. Another answer to that question is that high unemployment is making things worse for people who are trying to buy individual insurance policies in the state. When people lose their jobs and have to buy individual insurance, it turns out that a lot of the healthy former employees decide to drop insurance because, you know, why would they pay for something that they are not going to use? Whereas people who are sick, they really scramble to make sure that their insurance coverage continues. And what that does is that drives up the cost for everybody on those individual plans. Of course, in 2014, everybody will be required to carry insurance, healthy or sick, and hopefully things will change. But, you know, there is that gap. The bill was passed this year, doesn't go into effect until 2014, and the next 3 years are going to be hell.
All right. Moving on. Mark Emery. Who is Mark Emery?
Mark Emery is an entrepreneur who for the last several years has been operating a mail order business out of British Columbia that sold marijuana seeds primarily to Americans. And it's been the Canadian government didn't really care because they don't have nearly the draconian attitude toward drugs that the U.S. does. But the U.S. have been trying for several years to extradite and prosecute Emery under federal laws for his distribution of pot seeds. They finally succeeded. He got a 5-year sentence this past week for selling mail order pot seeds, and so he'll be off to jail. And what the U.S. has a new political prisoner because he's been very open about it, saying the reason he's doing it is specifically to challenge the United States' prohibition on marijuana consumption, and so he'll be going off to federal prison where he'll presumably operate some sort of mail order business in spare time.
Wow. All right. Well, from that to a study coming out of UCLA.
Yeah, there's a study out of the UCLA Medical Center and the Los Angeles Biomedical Research Institute that was looking at the potential health effects for the use of the psychedelic drug psilocybin, which usually most people recognize psilocybin as an ingredient in magic mushrooms. What the researchers did is they took very small amounts of psilocybin and they gave them to patients with advanced stage cancer to help them treat anxiety and pain. And what they found is that the psilocybin allowed them to relax. It took care of their anxiety, and it made it so that they didn't need as much narcotic medication as they would have otherwise needed, and that the effects from one small dose of psilocybin could last from 2 weeks to up to 6 months after they'd taken it. I found that pretty astonishing. But it's also one step in the process of trying to really look at what use these compounds can have. These drugs that have been demonized by the federal government and by conservatives, these things can have a useful pharmacological effect, and it's long past time that research was done to look at what they can actually do for us.
Yeah, and the U.S. government has been fighting research for a long time on a lot of these different drugs, and the same is true about the medical properties of marijuana, that one of the reasons we don't have the body of scientific knowledge, or haven't had that body as much as we need to, is the obstruction of the U.S. government. And now a lot of this slack has been picked up by research from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
As well as it's partly... because these are elements that are out there in nature already that people wouldn't really have to pay any money for.
Yeah, and what was interesting about the study, too, is that they found no side effects, no negative side effects from giving them such a small dose of psilocybin. Again, a naturally occurring compound, not something produced in a lab or a pill that you take that's been chemically produced in a lab by a pharmaceutical company that's got a number of side effects, and you have to take another pill to deal with those side effects, et cetera.
Yeah, the patients were a little concerned of why the lab assistants were three-headed lizards, but other than that.
No, actually the dose was so small that it didn't provoke any kind of a psychedelic experience in any of the people who took it. It was strictly...
That's what they said.
Yeah, that's what they said. But if it did, you know, so what?
All right. So, well, speaking of side effects, talk a bit about the wave of Republican candidates you're anticipating.
Yeah, you know, we're hearing a lot in the media these days about Republican candidates taking over the House and Senate and governor seats in various states. And, you know, it's very possible that that could happen. And I just want to talk for a minute about why that would be. If you really look at the two major pieces of legislation that Congress has passed this year, the health care reform and the financial reform, both of them were watered down quite a bit from the original proposals. Some of the best amendments were defeated for two of those bills, and neither of them has really taken effect yet. The health care reform doesn't take effect until 2014, and as we said earlier, people are seeing this year and are going to be seeing up until 2014 major increases in their health insurance premiums that are coming at a time when inflation is low, salary increases are not to be seen anywhere in the U.S. And, you know, people are worried about the jobs they do have. A lot of people are out of work, and people are scrambling to be able to afford paying the amounts they're currently paying for health insurance. And when their policies increase, when their premiums increase 20 to 40%, a lot of them are having to drop their health insurance. And they're saying, you know, what happened? Didn't Congress pass health care reform? You know, look at us. We don't even have health insurance anymore.
The other piece of that is that the Democrats, once again, have done a very, very poor job with a massive assist from the clattering chattering classes in the media of actually pointing out that the reason these bills have been watered down, the reason why there hasn't been help forthcoming for people who've been really hurting in this economy has a lot to do with the Republican obstructionism in Congress, and that the people who've been creating this particular problem in Congress are exactly the people who are threatening to take power now, and they don't have any of their own solutions except for the failed policies of the Bush administration that put us in this mess to begin with. And in a lot of cases, and with a lot of these Tea Party candidates, they're even crazier and more radical than the people who created those policies last decade. It's a very worrisome thing where people are understandably aggrieved, and the Democrats, rather than recognizing that, you know, they're in a knife fight, have been trying to be conciliatory toward an opposition that isn't interested in any kind of concessions or compromise, really isn't interested in governing because philosophically they're opposed to the idea of government itself.
Yeah, and the Democrats don't really comprehend that, and they don't know how to deal with that.
All right. Excuse me. Moving on. Effects of climate change. Yeah, I'm just
you said one of the effects of those, one of that effect, or was it the psilocybin kicking in?
Looking for some here.
A University of Toronto study coming out this week that was actually conducted in the Rocky Mountains in the U.S. Suggests that one of the major reasons for bumblebees and the bee populations in general being stressed, as they would say, which is to say that the bee populations have been dying off in many parts of the world, is due to climate change. That is to say, plants are flowering sooner in the season, and the bees, and particularly the queen bees, are still in hibernation, so they're actually missing, or they're not as efficient during the primary pollinating season.
They're missing their main source of food.
They're missing their main source of food, and of course, this also has implications for a lot of the flowering parts of the world, as well as a lot of agriculture, very dependent on that pollination. And you know, pollinating insects, if their cycles are being thrown off by climate change, that's a major threat not only to those species, but also to food sources for humans.
All right, moving on to international and Afghanistan.
Yeah, this week the Afghan Central Bank pledged to shore up Kabul Bank, the bank that's gotten into trouble, a bank that one of the shareholders, it turns out, is a brother of Hamid Karzai. that the Afghan Central Bank transferred money out of its foreign reserve accounts to help shore up Kabul Bank. Well, I just want to point out that that money is donor money. That means it's taxpayer money from governments that is that have pledged donor money for Afghan reconstruction, which means, of course, that some U.S. taxpayer money is bailing out Corruptistan, the new name Afghanistan.
First poppy national.
Yes, exactly. And the attitude among U.S. military and civilian advisors in Afghanistan is that corruption is endemic in Afghanistan, and there's just not much you can do about it.
It's how those people are.
Yes, and they have a higher tolerance for it, et cetera, which is absolutely not true. I mean, that is the main driver behind what is supporting the Taliban. Is because
and frankly, that's racist.
Yeah, and because is because Afghanis cannot stand the corruption among the warlords that we put back into power. Remember, these are the same guys that were kicked out of power by the Taliban in the first place, and the Taliban got their support from Afghanis who couldn't stand the corruption and the infighting and the civil war brought on by these same guys we've put back into power.
Yeah, and who saw the Taliban as, you know, they're religious fanatics. But at least they're honest.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And Iraq.
And in Iraq, the U.S. is proposing a solution to Iraq's collapse of its government. They want to put together a new coalition, a new council that will take power, some of the powers away from Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, who didn't win the election in March. Ayad Alawi's coalition won the election by 2 seats. Over Maliki's coalition. The new council that the U.S. wants to put into power would do 3 things. It would approve military appointments, it would review the budget, and it would shape security policy. In other words, it would do most of the really important things that the prime minister and his cabinet would do.
And, of course, take away any kind of democratic accountability that the people of Iraq would have control over their own government.
Right, and the U.S. wants to put Ayad Alawi, a prime U.S. ally, at the head of that council,
and this is versus
the Iranian proposition for the Iraqi government. They would like to see an alliance of Nouri al-Maliki and the Iraqi National Alliance, a group that's headed by Muqtada al-Sadr. They're both Shiite parties. They have much more in common than Ayad Alawi and Nouri al-Maliki. But the problem is that the U.S. has said they won't deal with Muqtada al-Sadr. So it's kind of interesting to see what's going to happen and which of the two proposals will win out.
Yeah, the irony here is that the Iranian proposal is actually much more friendly to democracy than the American proposal.
Yeah, and what's interesting too is this past week Joe Biden raised the possibility that if the current vacuum continues in the Iraqi government, if there's nobody heading up the government, then there's the possibility of the Iraqi military stepping in and taking over. I almost wondered, was he saying that wistfully or?
No, there's no history in the United States of trying to encourage militaries to take over a democratically elected government. It just doesn't happen.
Events.
Yeah. Today, the anniversary of 9/11, of course, and the coup in Chile, Tent City Planet, a theatrical event, will be taking place, a free public performance between 2 and 3 o'clock down at Westlake Park. Go and check that out if you're downtown. And Wednesday, on the 15th of September, the Political Will to End Homelessness Conference will be held during the day between 10 and 3:30. At St. Mark's Cathedral. A lot of good speakers and resources at that as well.
All right. Talking as we do every week with Job Parrish and Maria Tomchick, both with Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State is a fine online publication these days at www.eatthestate.org. More events in its calendar, a blog, compelling stories, yada, yada, yada. Go check it out, www.eatthestate.org.